Mini-episode 900 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to mini episode 900 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and today we're honoring our greatest guest, Bob Barker, with a clip from each of his seven appearances on the program. When we came on the air on January 14th, 2007, we only overlapped his stay on The Price is Right for 6 months, and subsequently we've been fortunate enough to be approved by Bob and his outstanding advisor, Henry Bollinger, as a conduit to the public in his retirement years. I've said before that it's the program's greatest honor and one of my most substantial as well.
Something that really kind of struck me is that it wasn't really your typical celebrity book in a lot of ways, because, again, when you look at the span of your life, it seems as though probably about maybe the first half of it or so, roughly, was lived in a time in this country before we really had such, you know, coarsening that we've had of the modern culture here. And in recent decades, celebrity books have tended to settle on the salacious, settling scores, things like that. Your book, and it wasn't like a preachy kind of a thing, but it was just like kind of an upbeat positivity to it. You're just going to tell things kind of like they are, and you didn't really delve into any of that stuff. And I found it personally kind of refreshing to see a celebrity book that didn't seem to need to go out of its way to try to sell copies. You seemed to be confident enough in yourself that you were going to sell copies without having to resort to any of that.
Well, I tell you, you're a very discerning fellow. I made every effort. I decided when I first started writing the book that everything that I have done on television has been fun. Truth or Consequences was a fun show. Price is Right was a fun show. Even my specials and my guest appearances, they were all on shows that were happy shows. And I wanted to write a happy book. And that's what I tried to do. I wanted to make it conversational, which I've been told I certainly did. And if you look through the book carefully, you'll realize that I did not say anything derogatory about anybody. As you said, it was not a typical Hollywood tell-all type book.
Seeing that at its roots, as you did, the beginning of that evolution to right now, the Monday night, the culmination of what it's become, and working in The Price is Raw on Monday night there and having that kind of fun with it, that must have just been such an experience with you, much like probably parallel to some of the things in Priceless Memories where you've seen the way that television has evolved over time and some of the different things that happened in the course of your career. You've seen this business that you've watched from afar probably most of the time. You get to see it Monday night and how it's grown into this modern marvel.
Absolutely. I did see Gorgeous George at that time do a completely new and different thing. He was in the vanguard. He was the first of these wrestlers to have an act. Before that, it had been pretty straight wrestling, but he made it a show. He really did. All on his own, it became a show the moment he entered the arena. And now, that experience for me, I went to Chicago to do it. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, Vince McMahon, he is one very bright, very sensitive promoter and producer. He was right in the middle of everything, and he's put together a group of young people, and they are real pros. I don't mean the wrestlers now. I'm talking about his staff and his technicians. And those wrestlers, each of them has a personality, and he plays on that. He has his own music. For example, on a couple of occasions, I talked first with the wrestler who was already in the ring. And then I would say, and now, believe it or not, your opponent is, and I wouldn't say his name, and he wouldn't come out. The music for him would come on, and they'd start screaming. They were either for him or against him, and then he'd come on. They know him so well that they're all they're identified by their theme songs. But yeah, it's a production. You just have to be right in the middle of it to really appreciate it.
And on that note, Bob, what was the one thing that may have surprised you most going into and doing Raw that you didn't think about beforehand after seeing the entire production take place?
Well, when I went into it, the show was formatted, and of course I started it playing a pricing game. The things that developed during the show gave me an opportunity to do the same thing that I did when I was doing the television Price is Right. The wrestlers gave me an opportunity to have real fun. There's a great young fella. His name is Chris Jericho. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the contestants in the pricing game. And he came in there looking positively sinister. And he went down to contestant's row, and he won his way out of contestant's row. And instead of going toward the ring and do this wrestling, he had to wrestle then for another prize. He came up on stage and just approached me, you know, and came right up, I mean, in my face. And he said, "You're not treating me with respect." And I said, "I'm respectfully asking you to get back down there in contestant's row." But then I said, "Now listen," I said, "your mother is not going to be proud of the way you're behaving now." And then I turned to the audience after he said something else. I said, "He is being a naughty boy, isn't he? Isn't he?" And they loved that. And then I said, "I'm afraid now, Chris, that if you don't get down there and behave yourself, I'm going to have to take you over my knee." And he finally got down there. And after he came back to me backstage, he said, "Man," and he was straight-faced and sinister, as I said. And he said, when you pull that line that you were going to take me over your knee and spank me, he said, "I could hardly keep from smiling myself." He said, I really had to try to had work on being tough. But things like that happened throughout the whole evening. Things, ad-lib situations in which you could really have fun. And that's what we did on Price for 35 years. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
As great as it is to be Bob Barker most of the time, maybe the exception to the rule is whenever something happens and it gets sensationalized. You did have the fainting spell, I guess, back in September. And that had a tendency to really get blown out of proportion, it seems like. Why don't you take the opportunity, Bob, set the record straight, because clearly anybody can listen from talking to you. You're as strong as you ever were.
Oh, yes, I feel fine. I thank the good Lord. I've been blessed with good health. I went out to a shooting range, and I had I was given a new 45, 38 revolver, and I went out to fire that, and with a friend of mine, with Roger Dobkiewicz, who used to produce Price is Right, and it was a really hot day, and we had to wait and wait and wait. And finally, when we were ready to go, I was hot and tired from waiting, and I think I was probably dehydrated. And then I put on a pair of these protect your ears. You know, they're like earmuffs, mm-hmm. and they were really tight, and I just slowly started collapsing. I realized that I was going to, and I just kind of knelt down, and they put me in a chair, and I sat there, and they called an ambulance, and I told them I was going to be all right, but they insisted, and so they put me in the ambulance and took me over and checked me out, and they agreed that it was probably some dehydration plus the things on my ears kind of disoriented me, mm-hmm. and I was fine that evening, as a matter of fact. But I was fine the next day. I was on my feet doing it. In fact, I worked out, so it was no big deal. But as they do a lot of things, they made a big deal of it.
Down in Zanesville, that tragedy yesterday that we saw with the animals and the kind of really non-existent and shameful lack of oversight here in the state of Ohio that leads to something like this, clearly those are the type of issues you've been campaigning about for a couple of decades now, but the better treatment of animals, and it's just a shame that the way that the laws were not constructed here in this state, it leads to a situation like that. They get on the loose, and authorities have to do what they have to do to protect the people. It was just terrible.
Well, it was a tragedy, just as you've said, and there's some interesting sidelights to this. Well, one thing, let us hope that the enormity of this tragedy will cause the states that do not have laws or do not have adequate laws about wild animals, that they do something about it. These collectors, as this man was, he had 56 animals, 49 of them were killed. The others ended up in zoos. The enormity of this brings the attention required to do something about it and prevent something like this. Now, they're lucky that someone or several people weren't killed, because with these wild animals running all over the area, it could have happened so easily. And 25 of our 50 states have no laws regarding collecting wild animals or inadequate laws. And those 25 states have got to do something about it, or there are going to be more animals killed and more deaths of human beings. And Ohio is one of the four worst states in the entire country, so far as animal law for wild animals, that is. Ohio, Oklahoma, and Missouri, and Nevada are the four bottom of the whole bell. And let's hope that this will cause people to start demanding protection. And another thing that's interesting, this fellow, among his 56 animals, he had orangutans, he had cheetahs, and he had chimpanzees. Now, most collectors can't get their hands on them. Where did this guy get them? I know that Ed Stewart and Pat Derby of the Paws Sanctuary are going to go after it, and they're going to find out where he got them, and they're going to follow the paper trail right back to where he actually laid his hands on them. Did he buy them from a zoo? Had zoo be in trouble if he did? Did he get them from an illegal breeder? Let's hope they get him if he did. But it was just an appalling thing.
Last week's 90th birthday celebration with the Price is Right return, it was a very, very special moment. I saw all of the footage and some of the behind-the-scenes footage that went up on the Internet afterward, and it looked like a great day. Did it really completely live up to your expectations?
It was one of the most heartwarming days of my life. They were so nice to me, so good to me, everyone on the show, from the producer right on down, everyone. And the folks came down from upstairs and said hello to me. The new head of daytime came down. Everyone just did everything they possibly could to make it a nice day for me, and they certainly succeeded.
Oh, that's outstanding, because that's exactly the way that it came across on TV, and certainly the good vibes of the people there and the guests that were on the show, and particularly one of the contestants, Gail, with how she did there towards the end. It was very, very clear how much you have meant to people over the years and watching some of that footage.
Well, thank you. I tell you, it's meant a lot to me over the years. I enjoyed every moment of it. I've been blessed. I had two shows, Truth or Consequences and Price is Right. I did them for more than 50 years and never got up one morning and thought, oh, I don't want to go to the show today. I loved it. I had fun, and I am grateful to the good Lord for making it possible for me. I have great sympathy for anyone who dreads going to the office or to his job, who looks forward to the weekend, looks forward to the vacations, looks forward to retirement. And That's a tough way to live.
Not exactly every 20 years, but it does seem like it's kind of come in clumps. You know, the 30s into the 40s, the 60s, the 80s, and now this great run that we've been on now ever since 2004, a couple of pennants, two World Series, maybe a third one this year. How does this era stack up to some of your favorite ones of the past?
Well, of course, the Gashouse gang will always be my favorite team, but I must confess that they've just been great in recent years, too. You mentioned Stan Musial. I told you I was in the Knothole Gang in Springfield, Missouri. Stan came through there. He played there for about 15 minutes before he went up to the big club. But Frank Crespi, remember him? He was there for a while. We had a lot of them.
That's incredible. I don't think I've ever seen an Indians player in the minor leagues who's gone on to be anything more than a peanut vendor. That's great to see Stan Musial at that level. You had talked about previously about how your ties in wrestling had gone back to the days of Gorgeous George, and of course
that's
there was
right.
That big.
I saw Gorgeous George before anybody. Practically, it was when I was in Springfield, Missouri. There, I went back. After I got out of the Navy, I went back to finish college, and by that time I was married, and I ran the concessions at the Shrine Mosque where they had wrestling, and Gorgeous George came through there before very many people even knew about him. It was just, but they loved it. Oh, he had the place rocking any time he wrestled there, and a lot of the others that got their start there as well.
I'm struck by what you said about Gorgeous George coming through Springfield. So, in other words, you got to see a lot of the greats coming through Springfield before they were anybody. Gorgeous George, Stan Musial. Is there anybody else that came through there before they were famous?
Well, do you remember Frank Sinatra?
Yes.
I saw Frank Sinatra at the Shrine Mosque there in Springfield, Missouri, when he was singing with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. And Tommy Dorsey introduced him as a young man who had just joined the band, and this is the first time that he had ever sung with a band, and he sang Indian Summer. And I was there with my young lady friend, who became my wife, Dorothy Jo, and I'm tone deaf, but we listened to Sinatra, and I said that, I said, honey, I said, how is he? I said, is he pretty good? And she said, yeah, he is pretty good. And he was pretty good. But years later, I was narrating the Rose Parade for about 20-some years there on CBS. And he was the Grand Marshal. And I always taped an interview with the Grand Marshal before the parade that we would play while the Marshal rode by. And I was talking with Frank after we did the interview. And I said, you know, I was in Springfield, Missouri, when you came through there with Tommy Dorsey. And I said, was that really the first time that you had ever sung with a band? He said, could have been. It could have been. And a good friend of mine from Springfield became a top disc jockey in New York. And he had Frank on his show one time, and Jim and Lowe, that was his name, Jim Lowe, and I were very good friends, and we had double dated that night. And Jim said, you know, I was in Springfield when you came through, and the same thing. And Sinatra said, it could have been, it could have been. And you know, if it was Joplin, Missouri, wherever the band went next, and he said that same thing. I bet he said it could have been to everybody because he didn't want to disillusion them, you know. I thought it was kind of him.
There was a great story in the Wilkes-Barre Times Leader, and I know that some other publications have written about this, the approaching anniversary, 60 years to the date, of what will go down as the first pre-recorded show in TV history, Truth or Consequences, getting to do that. And I was reading about that. I was kind of amused when you were talking about the circumstances of it, of having to do that from the Pacific Coast at like 8:30 in the morning and an audience that wasn't properly into it at that hour, and it's something you'd prefer to do with a midday crowd, and about the handicaps of doing the show at 8:30 so it could be 11:30 on the East Coast. That was kind of interesting as I was reading about that, and again, a big piece of TV history that you were a part of there as Truth or Consequences really kind of revolutionized TV in that way.
Well, it certainly did. And you're right. We were doing Truth or Consequences live at 8:30 in the morning. And this was my first national show. And no one knew who Bob Barker was or anything about him. And we were doing it here at I can't remember the name of the building now. It's still there, and they've changed the names about three or four times. But in any event, in the marquee where we were doing it there at this theater, on the marquee it said, "Free Donuts and Bob Barker." And that was when I was first doing the show. After a few weeks, Ralph Edwards told me, "Well, you're my man. It's gone splendidly, and you're here to stay." And I said, "Well, then, may we please change it to Bob Barker and Free Donuts?" And so I got top billing over the donuts, and that was my first step into stardom.
Bob, that's something the rest of us can only dream about, is getting our name above Free Donuts on a marquee. I'm not there yet, but I hope to be there one day.
Well, it took time.
Yes. Nothing happens overnight.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.